This is Farming for Nature. I'm Bridget Barry. A question I regularly get over email is farmers, or wannabe farmers, asking if it's possible to make a profit and support nature on a few acres of land. So I thought I'd bring on Cathal Mooney, a young farmer from Donegal who runs Heather Hill Farm, who does exactly that on his 10 acres. As we approach Christmas, he explains here how he farms free-range turkeys on his 10 acres. Cathal, thanks for joining me today. You have 10 acres of farmland in County Donegal. It's a very diverse farming system, but part of that is producing turkeys. You might just describe your farm and your farming system to us.
Yeah, we're probably on the small side of the scale here. We're just on 10 acres. And we're in southwest Donegal. We're right on the Atlantic coast. I can see the ocean from the farm. So we get all the beauty of that, but we also get the weather from that as well. So can be a harsh terrain at times as well. And that's why we really put an emphasis on growing a lot of tree protection trees, windbreaks on the farm. And that does attract a lot of the birds as well. As you said, we focus on being as diverse as possible. So we've a lot going on. We as well as turkeys, we do laying hens, broiler meat chickens. We've got cows, sheep, goats. We do some pigs. We've got a little bit of woodland on the farm as well. We run some pigs through there. And we've also been integrating fruit and nut trees and berry bushes in a silvopasture system into our grassland. Then we have tourism, agritourism, and some educational aspects to the farm. So we've a lot going on in our little 10 acres.
Brilliant. And amongst all of this, you have a gaggle of turkeys. I thought it was kind of an apt time of the year to speak about this. You might just tell me about your turkeys. What is it that you like about them as a bird?
Turkeys are actually one of the coolest animals, I think. They're like one of the closest living relatives to dinosaurs. I just love hanging out with them, sitting there watching them. They're very kind of like prehistoric in their movements. And they're really good foragers. You know, they will go and seek out all the little bugs and critters. And can quite a high percentage of their diet can be taken off the pasture, but they're cool. And then how big they get, like they grow into mini ostriches when they get bigger. I started off, I was farming all my life, but I grew up here on a little hill sheep farm in Donegal, and I thought I was a farmer, but all I ever knew was sheep. And when I started down this road of diversifying, I realized I wanted to get turkeys, and you know, I have a turkey, so I started with two turkeys, and we're going to eat them for Christmas. And I just hung out with them, watched everything they were doing. And then the next year, two became, I think it was like 10, and then 10 became 50, and 50 became 100, and 100 became 150. And that's where the kind of where we started with our turkeys.
So at the moment, you're raising about 150 a year, is it?
Yeah, we do about 150 a year. We pretty much sell them. It's kind of, because we built it up that way, and the reputation with them built up, it's the same people buy the turkeys kind of year in, year out now. And it's 150 is a nice round number for me. I'm happy, they're happy, customers are happy.
Interesting enough, your busy time for turkeys is not in the lead up to Christmas. It's actually in the late summer. Can you explain this to us?
Yeah, well, I suppose it comes back to those first two turkeys. I'm very much self-taught on the farm, observation is how I learn a lot of things, or by making mistakes, I suppose a lot of people do. And so with those first two turkeys, I used to like just watch them, sit there watching them from a little distance. And one thing I realized very soon was they don't like the dark. I had a little like field shelter for them, and it was half covered and half open, and the covered half was dark and the open half obviously was light. And sometimes if I was afraid the fox was around, I would close them in the shelter, and they would always hang out on the side with no cover. Even when it was pissing rain, they'd stand out in the rain as opposed to go. And I started to realize there was something just in their psyche that fundamentally they knew not to go into dark places. I don't know, was it somewhere in their development? The turkeys that went into the dark places never came out, and they never bred into the flock. They're the opposite to chicken. A little chicken loves a dark place. She'll go in there and lay her egg. But they just don't like the dark. Then the other issue is cold and wet is a problem for all poultry. So you're going into pneumonia territory. So I started to realize that, or well, in my head, I was starting to think like, Wintertime wasn't, they didn't look that fun. When you normally start turkeys, depending on how big you want to grow them out, for, if you're doing fresh turkeys for Christmas, you'll normally start them maybe around August, September. And they really seemed to love life. But then as it was getting colder and wetter, they just seemed a bit more depressed to me. And I was starting to think, like, actually, you know what? I was trying to put myself in the head of a turkey. If I was a turkey, December in Donegal does not sound like a whole pile of fun to me. And I was like, oh, the more I thought about it, the more I was kind of thinking, if I asked a turkey what's your idea of hell, they're probably going to say cold, dark, and wet, and that's what I want to put them in.
So
And
you buy them in the early summer, do you?
yeah,
You've kind of changed that around.
it kind of occurred to me that to me it's nearly unethical for me to do fresh turkeys at Christmas. Just it doesn't like a free range fresh a turkey out in pasture at Christmas is unethical, and I was kind of bummed out a little bit about it because I came to the conclusion I wasn't going to put animals in that environment. But then the thought kind of occurred to me, well, actually, summertime would be a really cool time for a turkey in Ireland. It's really warm. Daytime temperatures are, up in maybe in the 20s. Nighttime temperatures in the low teens. Grass growth is vibrant. Like, there's not much grass growing in the wintertime around here. I thought, what if we got our turkeys in the summertime and then grew them all summer? They live a long, happy life in the summer. And then we process them and we freeze them down and we have the frozen turkey. Because that's what I do with all my other meats in the farm here. We only produce things in season, and then we have to find a way of preserving it if we want to eat it throughout the year.
Your turkeys get to eat the best grass at the best time of the year, and then they're basically killed, plucked, ready to go when they're most nutrient dense. And I suppose this then puts a lot less pressure on the land at a time when it's depleted in the winter anyway.
Yeah, completely. All poultry, turkeys, chickens can be used as an incredible tool for regenerating the land because they can give you that herd effect. If anyone that follows Alan Savory's work and the people that are doing mob grazing are trying to achieve, it's very difficult to do that. You need big herds of animals to get that impact on the ground. So you basically want to trample down all the old thatch and grass and everything to have a new canvas for new grass to grow. Turkeys, chickens are great at doing that because you can put a large number of them in a small area and then move them on. And equally though, that can be, you can have a negative effect. If you're trying to do that in like waterlogged ground, you can start to have a negative effect. So by doing them in the summer, they're actually adding great like their biological impact on the soil is kickstarting the soil life. And whereas if I was to have them in there in the wintertime, they would probably actually be doing they'd be denuding the grass, they'd be making the topsoil exposed for the rain to come then and start to wash it away. So they're it's like all the bad things they could do, they do the opposite in a good way in the summertime.
It's really interesting. I mean, that concept that, not only they're not being fed in the dark, wet, cold winter evenings and dragging them to the final line at Christmas, but also for you as a farmer, that you're not, trying to feed 150 turkeys and then plucking them in the lead up to Christmas, which, I mean, I know on a personal level, we used to pick up our turkey on Christmas Eve and it was just plucked. And for that family, the chaos of that, so it kind of it changes the final line for you as well, and the stress around that. People might think by freezing them, do they lose their taste or their nutrient density, do you think, or
I look at it quite the opposite. So just to go back to your first point
Yeah,
there,
sure.
100%. That's one of the big, like, I suppose my philosophy is a happy animal will generally lead to a happy farmer, and an unhappy animal can very easily lead to a stressed farmer. And I don't want to be out there running after turkeys in the pitch black freezing cold, so I'm in by the fire all winter. And the other, like, from a if we talk it quickly, like a financial benefit to it is, if you're trying to get all your turkeys ready fresh for Christmas, that is an extremely skilled job that you need to be good at because you're going to have sold these turkeys at a set weight and you need to make sure those birds get to that weight. And any little thing could upset that. Whereas I can get my birds and I can actually take them because I'm not trying to get to an exact day. I can take them in different batches of when they're to a weight I want. And then I know exactly what weight they are, so I can sell them. I can inform my customer. Someone will say, "Oh, hey, I'm looking for a 13-pound turkey." I'll say, "Well, I'm sold out of 13, but I've got 14-pound turkeys here. Would you like to take one of them?" So it mitigates nearly all the waste, because you can't, if you've got 100 turkeys, you can't, 11 turkeys, you can't just sell the 100, because something could happen in the processing of them. You know, they might get a damage, then something could go wrong. So there's a that the system I'm working is really effective. For cutting any waste out of the enterprise.
That's really interesting. It's not something that I would have thought of anyway, like you say, that again, like taking away another stress for the farmer. You know what you're selling as opposed to assuming what you might be able to sell. Well, let's talk about when they're active on their farm. What is their management? How do you run your turkeys?
I run them. They're very low maintenance, the way I run. So they're outside all the time. They're never housed. I call it a gobbledygook, because it comes from a model from Joel Salatin in the States. But it's just basically roosts. I don't know if, when I started this, I didn't know of anybody that let their turkeys roost. But it's innate in a turkey to roost. It's a fowl. And like my turkeys get big, they can get up to like 10 kilos, and they will haul their ass up this big ladder, and they will get up there and sit proud as punch up the top. Every evening it's a scuffle to get up the top. And it's basically just a trailer with a roof, and it's got some windbreak like you would see in a veg garden on the sides, just to break down the wind. Generally the summer months here, it's not going to be cold, so if it does rain, they'll dry off really quick. So it's just a bit of a roof to keep the rain off them while they're roosting at night. And that's all the shelter they get. Then we use, for protection, we use poultry netting, electrified poultry netting, because we do have to consider predators, like the fox, or some places maybe a pine marten or a mink could be a problem. I've never had an issue with them. The fox is the only real predator I've had to deal with, so the electric fence deals with him. But the reason why I really use the electric fence is to try and integrate them in the holistic management of the grassland, and using that effectiveness of them going rooting through the soil or the grasses, using that their aspect. So we move them around. We're generally moving them every 2 to 3 days, depending on their size. So my day to day with them is, takes me about an hour to move them. Their gobbledygook is just a little trailer that I can pull with the quad. And I just got to set up two nets. And generally, with any animal, the best time to try and negotiate with them is when they're hungry. So I would hold off their feed in the morning till they're a little bit hungry. Then I'd move them, because they'll just follow me with the bucket of feed. And my turkeys generally be on a feed plan, so I visit them 3 times a day. That takes me about 5 minutes each time. Call it, that's 15 minutes. Let's call it even 20 minutes. And then every second or third day, you're doing an hour, and that's all the maintenance they require.
But it's only for 4 months, is it? Or
Yeah,
5 months?
if even 3 months,
3 months.
this is the other benefit to doing them in the summer. Their weight gain is much better, because they're obviously not burning as many calories, just trying to stay warm and they maintain themselves.
So in terms of kind of hard work, it seems to be turkeys aren't necessarily too much hard work to include in your farming system. They move around it. I mean, do they? I assume, obviously, with avian flu and stuff, they don't mix with your other poultry, but do they mix with your other animals?
I don't. I keep them separate. I don't see any reason why you couldn't. Now, I suppose it's important for me to say too, I don't brood my turkeys, because I'm only doing 150. I don't think it's worthwhile. Brooding turkey chicks is incredibly difficult. The best people I know doing it are families that have been doing it for generations, and it's just simply they're very finicky when they're from day old till about like 6 weeks old. Everything needs to be perfect. The temperature has to be perfect. The environment has to be perfect. The bedding has to be perfect. And all, in my experience, all they want to do is die at that point. Mortality can be very high. But then once you get them to 6 weeks old, they're bloody bulletproof. You cannot kill them. And because I'm only doing 150, it's not worth my while to brood 150 turkeys. If I was doing bigger numbers, I probably would brood them myself and just go through the heartache of, figuring it all out and getting all the little nuances perfect for them to do it right. So I buy them in when they're 6 weeks old, from a grower, and we run them from 6 weeks then until they're at weight. And that depends on the size we're going for, but typically that's maybe 12 to 15 weeks.
your farming system, it's very diverse. There's a lot of nature on your 10 acres. Does nature add much value to your product, do you feel?
I suppose it's a roundabout way of looking at it, maybe. How can I say this? I have a funny approach to farming. It's not a standard or normal approach of extract, extract, extract. My approach is it's a holistic approach in the sense that it's hard to quantify. We like to quantify a thing. We put in X amount here, and then we get X amount out. And I suppose I'm trying to balance the fact that I do have to run a business and I do have to do that. But I believe by having a holistic, diverse approach, it's mitigating problems. I'm trying to create ecosystems that are balancing themselves, and therefore I'm not worrying about massive creating these diseases or problems that I would create by being incredibly intensive, maybe. So I think there's a huge value in creating or mirroring ecosystems because they're self-organizing. And generally that means if there's bad things come in, like a disease or a virus, that the system will have something in place or a predator. If some I might have like a good example of that is I've got loads of fruit trees on the farm planted and invested quite a bit of money. I'd say I've put in maybe 10,000 euros worth of fruit trees over the last 3 years on the farm. But only small 1, 2 year old bare fruit or bare root trees. And hares would love to eat those. But I'm a chicken farmer and the fox is my number one problem. So, kind of the way I grew up, farmers like, we're going to go out and get those foxes. And then, yeah, happy days. But if I go out and kill all the foxes, who is keeping the hares in check? And there, all of a sudden, by culling all the foxes, I would condemn all my fruit trees to death. So it's that kind of notion of everything is in balance, and trying to let it all just balance itself out.
It's interesting, yeah, just finding that kind of, it's like you're on a seesaw the whole time trying to figure out where it doesn't tip. So economically, it sounds like you don't necessarily have to supplement feed a huge amount. Well, compared to maybe if you were breeding these, producing these turkeys in the autumn winter time. But on the flip side of that, sounds like you need really big freezers. But turkeys work for you, I assume, economically. Does the economics of it, do they
Definitely.
work?
I suppose it's important to say too that like poultry are omnivores. So they're not herbivores. So like they will get some, they're not getting too much protein from the pasture. They're getting a lot of vitamins and minerals. But if you want to get them to like, weights that people are used to seeing in the supermarket, you do still need to supplement with grain. They are omnivores. So you do need to, the protein has to get into them quite a bit. Like turkeys are quite profitable now. Like freezing wise, I just hire commercial cold storage spaces. It's not that expensive. Because 150 turkeys is a couple of pallets worth of turkeys. It's not a few chest freezers. So, but again, you just factor that in. Like everything we do in on the farm here is we do. Like the cost, knowing your cost of production is incredibly important. And I do all that through spreadsheets. But we factor in all the costs, how much we're going to put into each turkey, and then that'll determine what we will sell it for or what our profit is when we sell it. Because one of my goals too is actually to be, there's social goals in the farm. We want to produce quality food for the community, and we want to do that as affordable as possible. So how I price a product is basically I work out the cost of production, how much I need to get paid to do it, and that's what the customer will pay. It's not like cost of production plus labor plus a profit on top of that. I'm not out to try and make profit per se. I just want to get a fair salary. That's my profit to me. I'm not trying to grow loads of money in the business. I want to have top quality, affordable food for my community as well.
Where would you start advising another farmer if they want to start producing turkeys? What are the main things to consider?
If you want to produce turkeys fresh, I think you go into loads of problems because you're putting that animal in an environment it has not evolved to be in, and so therefore you're going to get unintended consequences. They may get sick. I'm talking about trying to keep turkeys alive in the wintertime. Or bird flu be an issue. That's the other benefit to doing them in the summertime. The risk of bird flu is, I'm not going to say mitigated, but much lower. One of the best things I would say is maybe try and replicate that model and do them in the summertime. You're already going to mitigate a lot of the problems you would face. You just got to think, it's not an easy, people comes back to one of the questions that earlier is like selling a frozen turkey. It can be a hard push at times. So I would say if you can muster up the courage to say, I'm going to go and try and sell some frozen turkeys, it's a good starting place because you'll have mitigated a lot of the other problems around maybe animal health, mortality, and these things.
You've kind of covered like some of the main things you've learned along the way, but I dare I ask, did anything go wrong? Is there, what were your biggest challenges when you started out with turkeys and on your journey producing turkeys?
To be honest, there's very little goes wrong with turkeys. I think that's down to two, maybe the two factors I put that down to. One, I put them in an environment that they've evolved to be in. Like, we don't have turkeys in the wild here, but we do in the States, say. And if you look at like in States, they can generally get through the places in the wintertime where they're warmer winter times, but summertimes they can thrive in the wild. So the second thing is, I think when I buy them in when they're 6 weeks old, I've sidestepped a lot of problems because I know if I was going to try and brood them, I'd have a lot bigger problems trying to solve that out, the mortality around that. And that would take a bit of time. I can't think of, like, there've been, I suppose I have loads of other enterprises on the farm that I know are way more problematic, or I had way more problems with. So the turkeys look like a dream beside them. But they're very straightforward.
That in itself is interesting because, as someone who's not a turkey producer, I always just assume they're quite contrary and difficult birds, but you're actually selling them as a really easy deal in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, they're like, they need no care. I literally just go there. I feed them 3 times a day, and that's all I do with them. We move them then every third day. They just chill out as long as they've got loads of grass for going around. They're psychologically stimulated, so they're happy, and they've no real. I mean, the only biggest problem I ever had with turkeys, one problem I had is we put up. I don't know if the listeners are familiar with poultry netting. It's like It's nearly like a fish net, but it's got a little, and it's about 4 foot high, and it's got poles, and it's temporary, so you can go around and pick it up, but then you can step it back in, and it'll stand up about 4 foot high, and you can put electric through it. And one day we set it up, but there was a picket fence, right beside it. And I didn't really give it any thought, but that night the turkeys all seen the picket fence and thought, oh, you know what, we'd like to roost up on top of that. And because it was close, because they can jump quite high when they get put their mind to it. So I got a call that evening from the neighbor saying my turkeys are wandering all over the place because they jumped up in the picket fence, and then they realized they could jump down the other side and they were out.
Takes free range to the next extreme. Could you just tell me how your farming system impacts on, say, the nature and all the species within your 10 acres?
I suppose it's a different, I don't look at it that way. I look at it differently. Like my farming system is based on nature. It is nature. Nature is my farm. Like, we're all farming nature. That's the cart before the horse, kind of in my head. It's all about nature, and I'm reaping the benefits from it. And on our farm, it's all about the soil. Like, the soil is the engine of the farm. Everything we do is to grow more topsoil. That's every decision we make. If it's going to grow more topsoil for us, that's what we're going to do. If it isn't going to do that, we're probably not going to do it. And so everything on the farm is working in like a symphony, to grow more soil. And like what I'm talking about there, the herbivores are on a holistic plan grazing system, so they're only getting one day's worth. So we're trying to manage the grasslands, because if we can manage the grass plants, they're really what's going to build topsoil for me. So if I can manage them in the manner in which they've evolved to be managed with herbivores, then we can get that going. But also, we're seeing our well, a lot of this grassland around me is incredibly bacterial dominated, and we know that isn't probably the best to be eaten. We need to get more fungi in there, so that's why we've started planting loads of trees through our pastures to try and change the profile of the soil to be more closer to the what we think is a natural balance of fungi and bacteria in the soil. And the animals are all playing a part in that as well. So it's, and again, I'm just I don't affiliate to any specific way or type of farming. We've got all these different types of farming, you know, regenerative farming, organic farming, you know, there's Korean natural farming. I don't affiliate to any one of them. What I do is I just look for things in all these different systems that make sense to me, and I think, oh, hey, that totally makes sense, and I just go and do it. And if it works and I can see improvement on the farm and things seem to get better, then I go with it. If it doesn't work, then I think, well, maybe I'll try something else.
Is there one memory that stands out for you where you were glad that you're not extracting from the farm or overproducing, that you could see nature was outside your farming system, nature was benefiting from it?
That point, I suppose it's an imaginary point in my head because I knew it was coming. But like when the price of fertilizer doubled last year, or maybe it's 2 years ago now, and it's going to continue to double down the line. Like running a business that's reliant on an input that you have no control over is a scary business. And for me, it's all about control of my business. I want to have control of the inputs, and this is the reason why I farm with nature, because I realized the farming model I grew up with, which was heavily reliant on inputs, which were incredibly cheap due to the cheapness of oil, that wasn't going to be sustainable. I understood that the price, you know, oil is a limiting resource. More than likely, the price of these cheap inputs is going to go up. Farmers have no control over that. They also have no control over the sales value they're getting. And I realized that model isn't something I'd be comfortable with, this high risk. And so to mitigate the input costs, the only system I found that seemed to be could work that I could manage was working with nature, working within the capacity of the land. And so, like I said, the soil is the engine of the farm, and my goal is to increase the horsepower of that engine.
Kahamuni, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you like this podcast, please subscribe to our Farming for Nature series. If you have any questions or queries regarding actions you can take on your land for nature, just email me on bridget@farmingfornature.ie. And if we can't answer them, we'll speak to a farmer that can. Meanwhile, check out all the resources and videos on our website, farmingfornature.ie, where you'll find loads of tips on what you can do on your farm for nature. And don't forget to follow us on all the usual social media platforms to keep up to date on what we're up to. Thanks for listening. Until next time.